And hi, everyone. My name is Nate Weck with South Dakota Public Broadcasting, and this week on the DakotaCast podcast, we're going to take a look back at the state football championships, which were in Vermilion this past week, and we're going to look ahead to the state volleyball tournaments that start in Sioux Falls this Thursday. My guest is Dave Nicholson, sports reporter of the Argus Leader in Sioux Falls. Dave, how's it going today?
Not too bad. How are you?
I am doing just fine. We got a state football just got done. We got state volleyball coming up. I mean, it's a busy time in sports world, but hey, this is what the job's all about, right?
Yeah, I think November is a bit of a haze, and I think you get to Turkey Day, and you feel, man, you feel that much better. Like the turkey, it tastes good any year, and it tastes extra good when you've made it through a long fall here. But it's been exciting. It's been fun. Can't complain.
Well, let's just look a little bit here, Dave, at the state football championships that took place last weekend here in Vermilion. Everything kind of got going here on Thursday. It was the 9A matchup between Canastota, Sully Buttes. Canastota pulls off a 56-8 win. Talk a little bit about this game, Dave. What did you like?
Well, and it's just an unbelievable performance from Jared Nielsen for Canastota. I think he only had something like 15 carries and took that 255 yards for three touchdowns. And, Canastota has some other weapons. They got a really good quarterback, Shay Jolly, and they got some, bruising offensive line there. And that was kind of the difference in the game. Sully Buttes likes to throw the ball and took them a little while to get going with their big quarterback, Centner. And, it just kind of the wheels fell off. I mean, it was a 42-0 halftime lead. And, Jared Nielsen, for all the great performances that we'll get to for some of the other guys in the nine-man class, Nielsen did it on 15 carries. I mean, think about if he got 25 carries, he might have rushed for 350 yards like Lincoln Gibbs did. So I thought it was a really impressive performance for Canastota. Very one-sided, but I think Nielsen's performance kind of helped make up for that.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, with the nine-man games, it's always kind of hard to tell sometimes what type of performance that there's going to be. And if a game's going to be close, if it's going to be a blowout. But in this one, it's pretty much seemed like Canastota controlled the tempo right from the get-go.
Yeah, they did. And, Sully Buttes, great season for him. It was 25 years since they were in the Dome last. And they really were impressive, against Stanley County early in the season. That's a team that really pushed things far, almost made it to the championship game, a 9AA team in Harriet Selby area. But outside of some of those games, out in Region 4 there in, Class 9A, it's hard to judge exactly good Sully Buttes, just exactly how good they were. Whereas, Coleman Egan, they had a little harder go on the schedule. They played some really good teams there. And pretty much blew everyone out. I mean, they pitched, I think, six shutouts in the regular season in eight games. I mean, they were dominant. I think this was one that, on paper, out of maybe all seven games, to me, looked like it was going to be one-sided. And as you said, they took charge right away. They busted off the big plays. I think when Nielsen answered with a 90-yard run there, it was pretty much over. He had a 60-yard run. And then a 90-yard run, and it was just, the game was over.
Second game of the weekend of the championships was Wolsey Wessington versus Woonsocket Wessington Springs Sanborn Central. Wolsey Wessington getting the win, winning the 9AA title, winning 36-22. This game, did anything surprise you in this one? I know Hunter Johnson, 303 yards, three touchdowns, set the record on Thursday. What else really stood out to you on this one, Dave?
Well, and this was one that that I was actually working on some others. I was writing. Ian Frazier came in for relief at the Argus Leader and ended up covering that game. But from what I was able to gather looking back at it, these two teams were kind of the presumptive favorites most of the season. And, Woonsocket Wessington Springs, Sanborn Central, which I'm going to, from hereafter, just refer to as WWSSC because it takes a while to get through that. But, they came away, I think, two-score win in the regular season matchup. And so for Wolsey Wessington to kind of come in and overcome that earlier season loss, it was a close game. But they were they got the only points in the second and fourth quarter. And so to close into half there, they get a late score, And then Hunter Johnson busts off a 45-yard run in the final 2 minutes, and that was really it. Great effort from the blockers, from what I read, but unbelievable performance, just like what you saw Jared Nielsen do. And Hunter Johnson becomes the favorite, becomes the hero. And later that night on Facebook, he sends a little message to his buddy over at Langford, Lincoln Gibbs. And Lincoln told me after the 9B championship Friday morning, he said, yep, Hunter sent me a message, and I believe I'm paraphrasing. I can't remember the direct quote there, but he said, you know, I set the mark here. You know, this gives you a goal to shoot for. And so we'll get to that here in a moment. But very impressive game for Hunter Johnson and for Wolsey Weston, you know, avenging their only loss of the season.
Well, then the night game on Thursday was Madison versus West Central. Madison getting the win 28-21. This is another one where, you know, Madison coming in seemed like, when it comes to championship experience, West Central, it seems like, completely just dominates that. But Madison doing a good job in this game. And, you know, this one turned out to be close.
It was. You know, the first quarter was even, and you saw West Central do some good things, but Madison eventually kind of shut them down. And I thought that in the first three quarters, you know, you go into the fourth quarter, it's a 21-0 game in Madison's favor. And so this was an unbelievable comeback by West Central to really push it kind of to the brink there late. I thought Marcus Vandenbosch, defensive end for Madison, he was lining up at left defensive end from them, and just really dominating and disrupting things at the line of scrimmage, made it really hard for West Central to get any kind of consistent offense going. In the third quarter, finally, Kent Mueller, head coach for the Trojans, told me, you know, their offensive line coach, you know, their offensive coach finally just said, well, we got to do something about this matchup. They moved their right guard, Hunter Hanley, who's, you know, just an unbelievable player, one of the best linemen in the state, just a huge athletic beast. Moved him out to tackle to deal with Vandenbosch. They finally got things going. But as you say, you know, you think of state championships, you think of the Trojans, and here Madison rips off a 21-0 lead. And I can't imagine what was in their minds as the Trojans are firing back here. I mean, they get two scores there on just long, gutsy drives and start the fourth quarter. And they took to the air to do it, and that's not their identity. I mean, West Central is not a team that's going to go out and sling it 40 times. Well, you know, Dan Skinner, I think, threw 40 passes in that game and threw for almost 300 yards and a couple scores, and really just a little too little late and and then Mason Layton with just an incredible game in terms of big plays for the Bulldogs. He was the difference in the game.
Yeah, you said it right there. You know, Mitch Hansen had 220 passing yards, and 169 of them were thrown to Mason Layton. I mean, the kid, three receiving touchdowns. I mean, he seemed like he was on a different playing field than everybody else.
It really, and, you know, they had the run game going with Brody Fredrickson, who had a fantastic game, over 100 yards. And so, you know, they had a balanced attack throughout the game, but when they needed a big play, you know, Layton came up with it. I mean, he the 76-yard touchdown in the third quarter there, and another 44-yard touchdown before the end of the quarter, and that's a 21-0 game right there. So, you know, Mitch Hansen was impressive, Fredrickson was impressive, some guys on defense, you know, Jackson Janke, was just a sophomore, incredible game from him. You know, he had a couple of stops behind the line there. Vandenbosch was just a force until they put Hanley out on him. And, you know, when they got the ball back there, you know, West Central scores on a huge touchdown play right after, you know, Madison, scores on the 1 yard run from Fredrickson. They go up two scores. It's like 20 seconds later, Rechtenbach puts the Trojans right back in. And it was a classic game. For a game that started 21-0 going into the fourth quarter, it's amazing that it was such a great game.
The 9B championship here, Dave, Langford area versus Harding County. Langford area getting the 52-28 win. You know, looking through the stats of this one, you know, it's pretty obvious to see who the difference maker was, being Lincoln Gibbs. When you only throw for 61 yards and you have over 500 yards of total offense, 508 rushing yards for Langford area, 350 of those from Lincoln Gibbs, 5 touchdowns. And, you know, we were talking just about Hunter Johnson. This eclipsed that Hunter Johnson mark.
Yeah. As I said, you know, Lincoln told me after the game, Hunter sent him that message on Facebook, said, you know, here's the mark, here's a goal to shoot for. And Lincoln said, you know, after the game, after he ran for 350 yards and 5 touchdowns, he said, you know, I never expected, you know, 300 yards. It's just, it's crazy. That would never, you know, never occur to me. But he gave a lot of credit to the big guys up front. You know, a nine-man, if you've got a really good offensive line, it can just be the real difference. And I think Lincoln's an exceptional talent, but those were some really big holes he had to run through, particularly along the left side behind Jordan Carson and Brady Weaker, you know, the head coach from Langford after the game. He was just explaining how crucial those two were and said, you know, Lincoln's runs, about 90% of them were behind those two guys. And so it's a huge game for him. He, you know, Hunter Johnson gets his name in the record books for a day or a little less than a day. And Lincoln rushes for 350. And, you know, like I said, he did that on 26 carries. What happens if Jared Nielsen in that 9A game to start the tournament? What if he gets 26 carries? You know, he might have 351 yards. Just across the board in nine-man, some unbelievable blocking performances, unbelievable, you know, individual performances by these running backs.
Well, then after that game, the nine-man were all complete, and we move on to the 11B championship, which was Friday afternoon. Winner, Tri-Valley. Winner coming into this game here, Dave, and I know we talked about it as well just in conversation about the question marks kind of surfacing about was their schedule tough enough and what could Tri-Valley do to expose Winner. But kind of Winner took the opposite route, it seemed, won 45-6 and just continued their domination.
Well, I was wrong. You know, I think Tri-Valley had a tremendous year. And with respect to schedule, no one in Class 11B had it harder than they did. They played actually a majority, five of their eight games they played in Class 11A against the likes of Canton and Lenox and Sioux Falls Christian and West Central. Those last three, of course, making up three of the four semifinal teams in 11A. And, of course, you know, West Central nearly pulled off the championship. So, you know, Tri-Valley, they have a 4-4 regular season record. I think they were really undervalued probably, even by, you know, some of my colleagues around the state, because their losses were quality losses. They gave some really good teams tough fights. And Winner didn't have much in the way of competition. That's not their fault. They play a West River Region 3 team, so they're going to take on teams like Chamberlain. They're going to take on, you know, to their credit, they whooped Parkston this year both times. They beat the defending champs, Parkston. Obviously down season, kind of reloading after last year's championship. But, you know, it didn't matter who Winner played. They destroyed everyone. And I didn't know how good they'd be. And I feel like having watched that absolute rout against Tri-Valley, I know exactly how good Winner is. And they might be the most impressive team I saw this year relative to their class. They played almost a flawless game. They dominated the line of scrimmage. They stopped Tri-Valley despite giving up some not the greatest, you know, starting field position. They were kind of backed up to start the game defensively. And offensively, it was run and pass. I mean, it was their ability to make plays on the ground and through the air. There was really no weakness. They were dominant. They made the big plays. They shut down Tri-Valley's big plays. And they just put an exclamation point on what was an incredible season. On the year, Nate, they averaged – for the regular season, just a tick under 52 points a game, like 51 point something. They gave up 26 points on the year in 12 games. I mean, they averaged in the regular season twice as many points as they gave up all season. That is incredible.
Yeah, that's insanely impressive. And I agree with you, Dave. I think out of all the teams that we witnessed, Winner, to me as well, was one of the most impressive performances from top to bottom. I thought their offense played great. I thought their defense played great. Just seemed like whatever they did, they were one step ahead of Tri-Valley.
Absolutely, and Tri-Valley's a team that you could throw up in 11A and they'd be a borderline playoff team up there. And, you know, and I think the honestly, the cupboard is a little bit bare in 11B. I don't think that's a real shocking opinion. With St. Thomas More, you know, going to 11A last year, you know, and a team like Bridgewater Emory Ethan making its first entrance, Parkston having a little bit of a down year. You know, you had a pretty good Aberdeen Roncalli team, but look what Tri-Valley did to them. And so there weren't a lot of great teams in the field. Boy, I would love to see Winner take on like a Madison or a Sioux Falls Christian or West Central, any of those premier 11A teams, I think it'd actually be a great football game. And I'd have a tough time picking the winner, but you know, they were awesome, and I was wrong, and I picked Tri-Valley, and I don't even feel bad about it. I'm just impressed with what the Warriors did this season.
Well then, okay, so we're done with five games at this point. We move into Friday night, and this is the matchup Yankton and Pierre that I think was a lot of people I think would agree with me on this, that it was the most exciting game from start to finish. Yankton, of course, has a 14-0 lead at halftime over Pierre, but then Pierre in the second half comes back, we go into overtime, and all of a sudden it's looking a lot like 2014.
Yeah, this is the drama has been a big part of 11AA this season, and going back to last year at the Dakota Dome, as you allude to, you know, overtime win for Yankton, and they start the season against Brookings. It goes five overtimes, and you know they really weather some injuries. And when they played Pierre in the regular season, they were kind of a lost team. They didn't have an answer at quarterback. Nate Stevenson really filled into that role as the season went on, and they were banged up all over the place. That was, I think, a 31-0 loss. It was something close to that. They just got pounded. And in this game, they roared to a two-touchdown lead in the first half, and they don't score in the second half. And it comes down again to a conversion and an exciting game, and in a season where, you know, 11AA kind of beat up on each other all season. It seemed like a fitting end that not a lot was going to separate winner from loser in that class.
Tanner Frick, talk a little bit about him here, Dave.
Well, you know, that backfield is interesting because the other guy, Sheldon Gantz, he doesn't get as many carries. And I think actually Caskey ended up with the second most carries. But, you know, Sheldon Gantz is a two-way beast. He caught some passes out of the backfield. He's just a bruiser. And then in Frick, you've got a smaller back who's shifty and kind of uses his agility. And he had almost a 100-yard game. You know, he busts off almost a 50-yard run. He got them on the board in the first quarter there. So really, really great game for him. That just shows the dimension of that backfield. They can hit you a couple different ways, and it was obviously important for him to have a big game, and he did.
Dave, do you agree with the play call in overtime? Do you go for the two-point conversion if you're Pierre and for the win, or would you go for the tie? Is it becoming a thing now the last couple of years? Well, maybe if you get into overtime against Yankton, maybe don't attempt the two-point conversion, or what do you think?
Well, like any two-yard play, I think generally those are high-percentage plays. The mathematicians would strongly have us believe that teams should be going for it on fourth down more often. Of course, this is a unique situation. This is a fourth down conversion so much as it is a one-and-done play. You get 2 yards, you get 2 points, you win the game. I don't have a problem with it. And part of it is you have to read, you know, how your team is responding. And the context of that game, you know, I did not see it live. I was working on a column and some other things from, you know, I covered 5 of the 7 championship games. That wasn't one of them, but I don't think you can second guess the coach or second guess the decision, because truly, for those of us sitting on the couch or watching from the stands, even the amount of factors that go into those calls, there's a lot of them. It could be tendencies and things that they see, you know. It wasn't like the final play wasn't close. It was close. They had an opportunity there. And I kind of like the guts. And, you know, against a team, maybe that does enter into the psychology. Is Yankton gets in these overtime situations, and they'll go 5 of them. I mean, gosh, look what they did in the season opener. So going out there, let's get a couple yards and get a state championship. I'm not against that. You still have to go make plays on every play. And, they didn't get it done. But good for them for having the guts to do it.
Yeah, and it was interesting for me, you know, for this game too, Dave, because I'm sitting here watching people, you know, tweet over, and I'm watching people from Yankton, I'm watching people from Pierre, both giving their inputs there at the end of the game, and of course you got the Pierre people, you know, very upset, and it's like, why didn't we kick the extra point? And it's just, you know, if you go for it and you make it, all of a sudden, you know, it's a genius play call, if you know, but it's only when it doesn't work where the scrutiny comes from, it seems.
Right, Russell Wilson, the Super Bowl last year. If the slant goes for, like, if his receiver doesn't hang him out to dry, and I'm not saying that's what happened to Pierre, just so we're clear. You know, if they make that play, it's a genius decision, and it's not the worst decision ever in a Super Bowl. It's a genius decision. So, yeah, this is pretty simple. You can overthink these things. You can overthink a five-second moment in our lives on a football field in Vermilion, or you can really just kind of move past it and say, hey, you know, there's a winner and there's a loser, and it was a great football game. And Pierce got a lot to be proud of. You know, they won the first 11AA championship. They find their way back to the Dome. You know, the governors are a proud program. They will be just fine, I think.
Well, Dave, last game of the state football championships is right up in your neck of the woods. Two teams that you're very familiar with, Sioux Falls, Washington, and Sioux Falls, O'Gorman. Sioux Falls, Washington gets the win 27-24 over O'Gorman. This game right here, a very close one. You know, it's another one of those games. O'Gorman started off very fast. It looked like O'Gorman was the team that came to play, and then Washington eventually found their groove, and they started coming back in this ball game. And we get to the fourth quarter. Washington takes a late lead, and it's drama fest all over the place, it seemed.
Yeah, it was really, not that this is that interesting, but it was difficult to write as I was watching the game. You know, we have a deadline. I had to send the story off pretty close to the game ending. And so it was, with it going that back and forth, it was just hard to have a handle. But what wasn't hard is tracking what the really big moments in the game were. I think, you know, that was obvious, as you allude to, O'Gorman's start. So the first quarter, you know, it was only a 3-0 first quarter, but they scored a touchdown on the first play of the second quarter. They really controlled the first 12 minutes of the game. And I think they made the Warriors punt on their first two possessions. They were getting the big plays on the ground, big plays through the air right there on that first drive. Luke Fritsch, you know, he came to play. Jack Peary busts off a huge drive, makes, you know, converts a couple first downs on catches, and then takes an end around 50 yards for a touchdown. They're up 17-7 at half. But, you know, looking back at that first half, so crucial that the Warriors put together a scoring drive, and they did it there after it was 10-0 on an 18-play, 79-yard drive. It took 7 minutes and converted six third downs. I mean, they went from not being able to, you know, I think they had 20 yards on eight offensive plays and two punts. And then they put together an 18-play drive where they convert six third downs. They get a touchdown. Jack, almost all of these games through the air. You know, Jack Skelhaus was remarkable after a dormant first quarter. And in the second half, it's a big play, first possession for the night, and a botched snap, you know, and your heart goes out to the center, because really, you know, that same kid had a great game blocking. I mean, look at all the rushing yards they piled up, but a high snap goes over Fritch's head, sets up a short field for the Warriors, and then we got a ball game, and the second half was incredible. If that's not the play of the game, Ty Smith's touchdown catch, the go-ahead touchdown catch really was. Third and two, and they heave up. They only need 2 yards. They heave up a 50-50 ball to Ty Smith. Antonio Cassiello comes up with the interception. As they get to the ground, Ty Smith rips it away. And you know, it's just an amazing play. I mean, we're probably talking about Cassiello after the game and the Knights championship if he ends up coming down with that ball, and Ty Smith was able to wrestle it away. It was a great football game.
Yeah, and, you know, especially sitting up in the press row for that one, it was very difficult to see if Ty Smith came up with it, what was going on. And as soon as the refs put their hand in the air and signaled that it was a touchdown, it's just like, man, that comes down to the want to, and Ty Smith wanted that football.
He did, and he didn't get a ton of opportunities in this offense this year because they ran the ball two-thirds of the time behind that massive offensive line, and I don't blame him for doing that. That was kind of their identity this season, and when O'Gorman – you know, added another defender into the box and came out and with some of those, you know, those undersized junior and senior linemen, you know, guys like John Malone were stunting and getting into the line. The strength of O'Gorman's defense has long been their linebacking core. You know, Doty McQuinja on that last drive, you know, before victory formation for Washington, their last drive ended on a failed fourth down conversion. You know, Skelhaus supplied all the big plays, and McQuinja tackled him short of the first down and was still flying around on that last drive. So, you know, I think O'Gorman was a little worn down. How do you not be? You got that many guys playing both ways, but it wasn't really an excuse for them. They were still playing, really playing their butts off there on that last defensive drive. And, You know, when you only get a minute 22 and no timeouts to try to get down the field, you got to try to make some plays. And, you know, Coach Steve Keeter said after the game, you know, we're not here without Luke. And also Luke's a tough guy and he knows the deal and he made a million plays for us. You just don't dwell on that. But, you know, Michael Enos, who hadn't played a game since, I think he played a few plays against Rapid City, which was a week after the Warriors played the Knights last. Otherwise, he's been on the sideline with an injured, I think it was partially torn tendon in his foot. He comes off the field and makes the game-winning interception. So that was kind of a neat little bow to kind of wrap up the championship story for the Warriors.
How big of a win is this for the Warriors, Dave?
Well, it's huge. It's huge for the program. It's probably even bigger for Chad Statham. I mean, here's a guy that won titles with Flandreau and Howard in 11B. And when he came to Washington, you know, he was having to replace, you know, a legend in Brian Hermanson, a guy who's since been, added to the state's, you know, High School Hall of Fame for coaching and, you know, was a kind of a legacy in his own right. And, you know, you've got the Warrior Way and you've got all the great players that came through there. So for Chad Statham to respond from 2-3-6 seasons with the championship year, it's going to mean a lot to, especially for the young guys in that program. I do believe in that. I think for the Sioux Falls schools, there is something to the tradition. Going to help the program out a lot, and they've got some pretty good players coming back. You know, they're going to lose Matt Farniak, they're going to lose Jack Skelhaas and Chaden Fitzsimmons and some really good guys on defense, but I think Statham proved the doubters wrong. And you know, he was always very quick to credit his coaching staff and, you know, the quarterback that he believed in that not a lot of other people did, to be quite frank. You know, Skelhaas turned in an MVP performance for the ages, and I think this one will always be memorable. If the previous Warrior teams, you know, that had Nate Gary, that went undefeated, that had the Farniak brothers, Tom and Derek the first time around, maybe those were more dominant teams. But this team will always be special.
The state volleyball championships, the tournaments are all taking place at the Denny Sanford Premier Center starting tomorrow and are going to conclude on Saturday night. All three classes are going to be at the Denny. How big of a tournament is this now, transitioning from football to volleyball? How big is this, Dave, do you think, for Sioux Falls?
Well, I think it's huge. I think, you know, like the state wrestling champion or tournament was in February, if I've got my months right, maybe that was in March. That was, you know, that was a great event too. And it's the only thing tough is as a spectator or someone covering it is, you know, there's so much going on. You've got, and that's going to be the case at the Premier Center. There's going to be a lot of action down there on the court. So you're going to have to know where you want to be looking. But I think it's great. I think Sioux Falls has the facilities. I think you look at other states that have successful models. They might have a target city or a target facility that can best accommodate it. And you know what? I grew up in Sioux Falls, so call me biased. But we do have the facilities, and it's a great opportunity for kids to play in an environment like that. And these kids that play in Class B and Class A, you're right. You know, some of the gymnasiums that they pack at the local level, the environment is incredible. They don't get to play at a place like the Premier Center very often. And a state championship atmosphere, I think, is going to do it well, like the state wrestling championships. You get that much action down there. It's going to be great for the city, great for the kids.
And then, of course, the state wrestling championships this year, both classes are out in Rapid City. You know, having three classes in one location, is this something that you think, Dave, that we're going to see more of in the future, especially when you look at some of the basketball tournaments, future volleyball tournaments, future wrestling?
I think it makes sense. And, you know, there's certainly an argument. I'm not sure how compelling from, you know, other communities about you know, being able to host in their sites and what it does to their towns in terms of, you know, invigorating or stimulating the local economy or having people interested. And I think that's all good and well. And I think also we have to think about organizationally, what's the easiest, what's going to be the best, what's the most efficient way to run a tournament. And I don't think it's wrong to look again to how other states do it. Because we're growing, our state's growing, our city's growing, at least in Sioux Falls. And so those are factors that play into how you run a state tournament. See how it's done other places, and if there are good ideas you can take them. I think we could be seeing a trend here in Sioux Falls as a future site for a lot of these state tournaments, and I think that makes sense.
All right, Dave, I'll get you out on this one. High school basketball starting up. What are some of the teams that I know you cover mostly double A, so I'll just ask you on that. What are the two teams that you like on both the girls' side and the boys' side, and as far as high school hoops go?
Well, I'll be honest, I haven't thought about it a whole lot yet. I've been living
been
in the
kind of
football
busy,
zone.
Huh?
Been living in the football zone. But you know, as I think about it, two teams on the boys' side. First off, I think on the boys' side, Lincoln just loses too much. They were such a senior dominated class in that championship team last year. Washington loses some really good players in Dangu, Benson. Help me out. But they lose Benson. He was a heck of a player. I don't know why I'm forgetting his first name.
Yeah, I'm blanking on it too.
Yeah, this is what the seasons do to my memory. But they have some really good guys coming back. Ty Smith, standout for the football team we talked about. Sam Sagano, senior point guard. He's really the guy. Matt Farniak is still a heck of an athlete. He's a pretty good basketball player. Let me tell you what. Not many guys can set a screen on Mr. Farniak. And then they have Carter Keller, who was injured during the football season, but is making his way back, and he's a deadly perimeter, got a deadly perimeter shot. I think O'Gorman, they'll have Luke Fritsch. They had a lot. Jack Peary. They had a lot of guys. Ben Lauer comes back for them. So I like O'Gorman. I like Washington. It'd be interesting to see Roosevelt. They've got some players too. Second year under Darris Buss, and so I think they could be pretty good as well. And then on the girls' side, probably start with Lincoln and Washington. Washington, the defending state champs. I mean, they've got to be the favorite. They get back a ton of the young players that really came along as freshmen at the end of the season. And then Anna Goodhope is a star. She's going to be a big time player in college. Sydney Arrington down in the post is one of the best fives in the state. So they're going to be tough. And then Lincoln still has some real playmakers, and Izzy Van Veldhuizen. They've got Anna Brecht. They actually, a player that played quite a bit started for Roosevelt last year, Brooke Lucian, she transferred, so she's going to be suiting up for the Patriots. Those would be four teams to look at in those two classes for sure.
All right, well, Dave, thanks so much for taking some time today, man. Good stuff as always, and have yourself a good Thanksgiving. Don't eat too much turkey, but make sure you watch plenty of football, all right?
I will do both, and it will be glorious.
Sounds good.
It will be glorious. Thanks for having me on, man.
All right, thanks, Dave. We'll talk to you later. That was Dave Nicholson, sports reporter with the Argus Leader in Sioux Falls. Great stuff, as always, from Mr. Nicholson. Again, the state volleyball tournaments begin on Thursday in Sioux Falls at the Denny Sanford Premier Center. Full coverage of the event, including live video stream to all the matches, class brackets and schedules, and blogs about the event can be found at sdpb.org/volleyball. Also, be sure to connect with SDPB Sports on social media. You can like SDPB Sports on Facebook and follow at SDPB Sports on Twitter. You can also follow me on Twitter if you'd like. I'll be live tweeting the state volleyball championships. My handle is at Nate_WEK SDPB. Again, that's at Nate_WEK SDPB. And that's going to do it for another edition of the Dakota Cast podcast on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Nate Weck, and have a great day, everyone.